This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 26th of July 2018. Hello and a very warm welcome to you for this week's edition of the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper, where we read extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle. I say a very warm welcome, but perhaps it might be better to say this should be a slightly cooler welcome in view of the very hot weather. We do hope you're coping with it okay and, well, even enjoying it. I'm Peter Lydiard, your presenter for today, standing in for John Parker. Our editors this week are Anne Few, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And I'm joined by our three readers for this week, Margaret Boyden.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
Well, first, our regular notices. If you know of someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with a recording you have received from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870370. That is 01962 870370. And when you finish listening to the recording, please put the memory stick in the yellow envelope, also putting your address label inside the envelope, and pop it in the post. No stamp required. Thank you. And just to remind you that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from one item before it finishes, or back to any of the tracks if you want to listen to them again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, you might like to know that as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recording of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. And you can listen to it off the website or download the recording to listen to it later. Or you could even plug your memory stick into the USB port on your computer. Right, so on to the main headlines for this week, which are Public Back's M3 plan, WinAC hits out at Sports Centre, and explore space a couple of miles east of Winchester. So, Margaret, could you tell us about the M3 Junction plan, please?
Public Back's M3 plan. The public are backing a multi-billion pound plans to upgrade the bottleneck Junction 9 of the M3. The Highways Agency is proposing to alter the interchange at Winnall, where the M3 meets the A34, A33 and A272, used by 110,000 drivers a day. Work on what would be the biggest engineering scheme locally since the M3 work in the early 1990s is due to start in 2021. The agency says there is overwhelming public support, with 96% of people who responded to the consultation backing the need for the improvements. Under the changes, free flow lanes will allow drivers travelling between the M3 and the A34 to avoid using the roundabout. The roundabout itself will be rebuilt for the additional lanes to run through it, increasing capacity and making it easier for traffic to go between the M3 and the A34. This will reduce queuing and make journey times more reliable. The agency said it will address safety concerns over accessing the A33 northbound, an issue highlighted by many people. Project manager Simon Hewitt said, "More than 110,000 vehicles use this busy junction each day to interchange with the A34 and routes into Winchester, often more than 6,000 each hour during peak times. Regular road users know that often becomes congested with queues backing onto the main carriageway. The upgrade to M3 Junction 9 will create new dedicated link roads to separate local and long distance traffic. Through traffic will not have to stop at the roundabout, freeing it up for local traffic and commuters. We are improving access for pedestrians, cyclists and equestrians with the upgrade, including a new 4-metre side cycle path with a new footpath next to the cycleway to the River Itching. We are aware of people's concerns about traffic merging between the A34 and A33. This was the most common point raised during the consultation period, and we are reviewing a number of options to address this. would help to allay the bottleneck at Junction 9, which has developed since the removal of Hockley traffic lights on the Winchester bypass in the early 1990s. But local environmentalists have warned that upgrading the junction will simply attract more traffic and create a new problem in the future. A public consultation was held in January and February. Some 854 responses were received. Information events were held in the Winchester area for the public and stakeholders, including local authorities, landowners and businesses, so people could look at the plans and speak to members of the project team. Some 96% of people said they agree that improvements are needed at the junction. 98% were concerned about congestion at Junction 9, with 92% concerned both about road safety and reliability of journey time. Work will start in 2021, subject to statutory processes. The upgraded junction is expected to be fully open to traffic in 2023.
Thank you, Margaret. John, your story about the sports centre, please.
Yes, WINAC hits out at sports centre. And just to remind us all that WINAC stands for Winchester Action on Climate Change. Campaigners and civic chiefs have clashed over Winchester's planned £38 million sports and leisure centre in a row over its environmental impact. City Council sports chief, Councillor Lisa Griffiths, issued a strongly worded statement after WINAC said the plans included serious inadequacies. In a statement, Executive Director Tom Brennan said, "The council has also an excellent opportunity to make progress on its broader low-carbon commitments, such as an increase in renewable energy generation across the district. At present, however, the application fails to seize these opportunities, and WINAC urges the planning committee to request further information. If the decision is made without this information, WINAC considers there is a risk that a decision granting permission may be susceptible to legal challenge." The group says the proposed leisure centre, which would replace the run-down River Park Leisure Centre, fails to consider policies relating to the site's carbon footprint. A spokesman added, "There are such serious inadequacies within the transport assessment that the application fails to meet the requirements on promoting sustainable transport. The inadequacies within the transport assessment could lead to the development having significant environmental effects in terms of air pollution and climate change." Hitting back, Councillor Griffiths, chairman of the Sport and Leisure Centre Committee, said, "We are deeply disappointed in WINAC's response to the planning application. WINAC has been a key participant in our sustainability and green issues panel for this project and were represented by their executive director and a sustainability expert. We specifically asked for WINAC to participate in this panel so we were able to benefit from their expertise and input. There have been many opportunities to raise these issues during the various meetings over recent months, but they have failed to do so. The council is fully committed to reducing its carbon footprint, and the design and supporting information submitted with the Sport and Leisure Park planning application wholly reflects this. We strongly dispute that the proposals are not within the National Planning Policy Framework, and that the package of measures to be delivered will provide an excellent choice of sustainable transport options. The Lib Dems have also ramped up their criticism of the scheme. Councillor Jackie Porter said, "The current price ticket of £37.5 million is £10 million higher than the original quote, but the facility mix is smaller. Costs are escalating with nothing extra for our residents." The row came ahead of last night's committee meeting, which was due to hear feedback on the planning application as the Chronicle went to press.
Thank you, John. Now, Tony, what's this about exploring space?
Well, explore space a couple of miles east of Winchester. A record-breaking British astronaut launched a new exhibition near Winchester. Astronaut Michael Foley officially launched Explorer Space at Winchester Science Centre and Planetarium at Maughan Hill. Explorer Space is a new immersive space zone that takes families on an adventure through the universe, featuring hands-on exhibits from meteorites to stardust, robots to coding, and atmospheric pressure to human spaceflight. Michael Foley also gave a special presentation to hundreds of children from across Hampshire before unveiling Explorer Space in front of an invited guests as well as an evening with talk in the planetarium. Ben Ward, chief executive of the centre, said, "Explore Space is a permanent addition for the centre, designed to wow families and ignite their curiosity in space. We've never had an exhibition like this. This impressive intergalactic set takes up the entire ground floor of the centre and represents the biggest investment we've made since the planetarium in 2008. Explorer Space activities take place throughout the holidays."
Thank you, Tony. Now, a quick rundown of what follows. We start with the death notices. Then we have Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, Khalid Aziz's column, letter from Westminster, Belgarum, historical items, what's on, and then the lighting up times. First of all, the death notices. Emmons, Donald Emmons, known as Don, on the 20th of July.
Percy, Stephen Percy, in hospital, 15th of July, aged 40.
Phoebe, Edward William George Phoebe, known as Ted, 19th of July, aged 97.
Roman, Brian James Roman, peacefully at home, aged 76.
Rose, Antoinette Joan Rose, known as Tony, peacefully in hospital, 17th of July, aged 90.
Thurley, Anne Christine Thurley, 12th of July, aged 85, after a short illness.
Trowbridge, Ronald Richard Tom Trowbridge, late of Alsard, Ropley and Hayling Island, peacefully, 17th of July.
Wakeman, Penelope Constance Wakeman, on the 14th of July, after a three-year battle with cancer.
Watson, Dr. Barbara Watson, née Leach, peacefully at home, aged 92. Well, now we move on to Christian comment, written this week by the Reverend Canon Mark Collinson. Margaret, please.
Save water for everyone's sake. I remember as a kid, the summer of 76, it was scorchingly hot, and as my dad used to work for the Water Authority, he came home with a badge saying, "Save water, bath with a friend." I've not lived here long, but the water we normally swim in at Shawford Lock is as low as I have ever seen it. We could be heading for the hottest summer on record if these high temperatures continue, and with that comes the inevitable water shortages. Water is one of those things we take for granted. Turn the tap and out it comes. Lovely, clean, drinkable water that we use for making a cup of tea, having a shower, flushing down the toilet, or watering the garden. Water is what we call a public good. It rains down from heaven in ways we can't control. As Jesus is quoted as saying, "God sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." Everyone needs water. Everyone gets to enjoy it. No matter who you are, water is life. When water gets scarce, we can go one of two ways. First, we can recognise that we may need to limit our own consumption in order to provide enough for others. I sacrifice for the sake of others. But this is at odds with the privatisation of the water authorities. Why should water companies benefit from me limiting the use of water that they have not managed well enough to meet the demands of their customers? Or or you can grab as much as you can for your own needs. This just makes the resource more scarce, with the result that either some people lose out and get nothing, or the price goes up for everyone. What is going to motivate us to hold back on consuming all the water we want? Christians believe that God, in sharing his life with humanity in the birth of Jesus, his Son, as an ordinary human being, is the motivation for new relationships in our society. His model for living is sacrificial. He gave his life that others might find life. Jesus has established the kingdom of God like a code of conduct for living in society in a different way, where community and cooperation takes priority over individualism and private consumption. The bonds of fellowship established through Christians loving others are described as people belonging to the body of Christ. We are not a collection of individuals, we are one body, in and through Jesus Christ. Just as we would not deprive our own body from drinking water which gives us life, so we cannot deny the fountain of life to any other member of the body. To do so would be to deprive our very selves. It is a denial of who we are as a society to grab what we can for ourselves at the expense of others. So if this drought gets any worse and a hosepipe ban is introduced in Hampshire, what will you do? And that's from the Reverend Canon Collinson, who's Canon Principal of the Winchester School of Mission.
Thank you, Margaret. Well, we now have letters to the editor. We've got four letters this week about housing, three about Brexit. Hurrah, I hear you cry. And the usual miscellany of subjects in letters this week. So starting with John, please.
Yes, Noel McCleary asks, agents for whom? Sir, like Mary Simmons, Chronicle, Letters, July the 12th, I too attended the drop-in meeting regarding the proposed development of 35 houses in Kingsworthy. This appeared to be run exclusively by the New Homes Delivery Team from Winchester City Council, appearing to act on behalf of a developer and answering any questions with anything they considered might reassure residents. It was notable that the land is now off Burnett Lane rather than Top Field, which has been its name during many planning applications in the past. Residents had been consulted on whether this development should take place during the LPP2 process and had not supported it. It is not included in LPP2 as part of the requirement for 250 houses to be built in Kingsworthy between 2011 and 2031. The Parish Council has been assured by WCC that this additional development will only proceed with the approval of residents. The questionnaire provided does not give the option of non-approval. It asks some detailed questions on the assumption that development will take place. It also asks a number of detailed personal questions. I was surprised to find that the form is to be submitted to a company called Newgate Communications Limited, based in Bristol. This firm on its website boasts getting under the skin of a local community, mapping out the individuals and organisations that matter and helping you get them on side. It also says, we have unrivalled experience helping house builders, developers, retailers and many others consult more effectively with communities and engage with local politicians and the media. And finally, our job is simple, to help you secure the on-the-ground support you need to be successful. It would appear that data analysis is part of their brief. The subsequent use of this data can only be guessed at. Most council taxpayers will be surprised to find that their taxes are being used to hire a firm to act against their expressed wishes. They will also be surprised to find that the New Homes Delivery Team acts directly as the agent of a developer. That's from Noel McCleary, Hook Pit Farm Lane, Kingsworthy.
Thank you. Tony, please.
This is a letter from Paul Dix, headed People or Profit. Sir, Anne Saunders, in her letter in last week's Chronicle, is quite right in saying that an increase in housing stock is badly needed nationally, and that Alresford is playing its part, like many other areas, in helping to contribute to this. It is hoped that the developers of the Sun Lane site will be kept to their promise of building a good proportion of affordable houses so that our young people are not forced to move away. It is, however, the A31 link that she also refers to that is causing the most concern amongst Alresford residents. The A31 will no longer be a bypass, which was built to take traffic away from Alresford. The roundabout, which is intended to be inserted, will instead bring extra traffic in and out of the town using narrow suburban roads not designed for this purpose. The developers have gone for the cheapest option and intend to build the roundabout almost on top of the houses at the bottom of Sun Lane, instead of an earlier, albeit probably more expensive, location further away. This will result in the maximum of poisonous fumes and noise from traffic as it decelerates and accelerates in and out of the roundabout, spreading across hundreds of homes in the Sun Lane and Titchbourne Down area. The health of present and future generations of children will be put at risk, who may develop respiratory problems together with lack of sleep due to noise and light pollution. This traffic solution must be re-examined before it's too late. Profits for developers should not come before the well-being of local people. This is from Paul Dix, Titchbourne Down, Alresford.
Thank you, Tony. Margaret?
And this is a letter from Jean Walker. Why comment? Sir, I refer to Robert Marshall's criticism of the proposed development at Sun Hill, letters July the 12th. I question why he feels it necessary to comment on something which will not affect him in any way, bearing in mind he lives approximately 23 miles away in Houghton. I fail to see why it is of any concern to him. Jean Walker, Grange Road, Alresford.
Yep, John.
Elizabeth Thorne's letter is entitled Water Shortages. Sir, no wonder Otterbourne residents and the Woodland Trust are very concerned about Eastleigh's planned 5,200 house development near Fair Oak. All of us in Winchester and surrounding area should be too. Chronicle, July the 19th. The Trust queries the planned new road dividing two ancient woods, harmful to wildlife. The nearby residents are worried about increasing traffic, when traffic volumes already approach saturation point, even before all the thousands of planned houses are completed, including those in Winchester too. Other big problems are lack of infrastructure and employment opportunities, but the elephant in the room is water supply and wastewater disposal. After 6 weeks without rain and more forecast, we should realise that water is a scarce commodity and must be used carefully, completely contrary to the, contrary to the current policy of building many more homes in an area already short of water, and with climate change likely to be more so in future. We aren't aware of any new reservoirs or sewage works having been built, and the current rate of abstraction from rivers cannot increase. All homeowners should be encouraged to use water more carefully, with efficient appliances and rainwater storage, but this is unlikely to happen. Our own, I don't know what this is, U/G.
Underground?
I don't know. Anyway, whatever it is.
Yes.
Rainwater storage, rainwater storage tank of 4,500 litres has run dry already. So our water bill may increase this year. Up to now, for two of us, it's been equivalent to Southern Water's average for one person. We are now reusing bathwater for the garden. Soon everyone with a garden will have to do this, like it or not. From Elizabeth Thorne, Airlie Lane, Winchester.
Thank you, John. Tony.
And this is a letter from Alison Biden. Put it to the vote. Sir, Brexit is Brexit, said Prime Minister Theresa May 2 years ago. A few weeks ago, the government's own commissioned impact papers were made available under tight security to MPs and members of the House of Lords alike. According to the Sunday Times, only 83 individuals out of a potential 1,450 are reported to have actually seen them. Yes, just 83. I have asked our MP twice if he has seen them and, at the time of writing, had no response. In the meantime, the BBC reports that the government is going to publish approximately 70 papers preparing the public and businesses for a no-deal Brexit. Warnings by Dominic Grieve of a state of emergency have to be declared, having been declared, and that the government is stockpiling food and medicines as a precaution. When we really know what Brexit means, shouldn't the country be asked again if that is what it voted for, and not leave it to politicians to rubber stamp something they haven't researched simply because it's the will of the people? And that's from Alison Biden, Northbrook Close, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
Thank you, Tony. Margaret, please.
This is a letter from Sally Penton. Food will rot. Sir, inward migration was a massively influential issue in the Leave debate. However, a mass exodus of young, intelligent and talented people is likely to be a consequence of a no-deal Brexit. Theresa May was questioned in Parliament last Wednesday, July the 18th, about the effects on aviation, health, insurance, tariffs, medicines and the environment. Her answers made it clear we are about to commit political and economic suicide. If I could leave this country, I would, and take up residence in an EU member state, as I do not wish to lose the benefits of this intellectually advanced and cooperative organisation which has maintained the peace in post-war Europe within the Union. A union that can draw on a huge pool of clever and forward-thinking people to govern and direct at a time when humanity is beset by multiple challenges: climate change, unstable leadership in the USA, and a continuing threat from nuclear annihilation. The very last thing we need is a harking back to an age of empire, flag-waving and rhetoric in which Britons never, never shall be slaves. Under rampant global capitalism, we are all wage slaves, and the gig economy is already a disgrace to civilised society. There will be no flag waving when the Brexiteers get control of the system and begin dismantling every compassionate and civilising measure passed in the last 70 years. There will be no flag waving when food rots at border parking lots and medicines run short. Publish the true information now, Mrs. May, and let people decide the issue on the evidence rather than the misinformation of the 2016 campaign. Sally Penton, Downlands Way, South Wanston.
Thank you, Margaret. And John, please.
Yes, after that reassuring letter.
yes.
Here's another Brexit one.
Hurrah.
I think it's the last one. Barbara Knight entitles it Two to Tango. Sir, our MP comments on Brexit that it takes two to tango. Chronicle letter from Westminster, July the 19th. He seems to forget that it's only the UK that wants to dance. The EU didn't ask us to leave. They want us to stay. It's not the EU that's being difficult, but our government, with its inflexible red lines, which is trying to insist that the EU should change its rules to accommodate our desire to leave. One can only admire the good sense and determination of the EU in resisting such unreasonable demands. That letter is from Barbara Knight, Byron Avenue, Full Flood, Winchester.
Thank you, John. Tony.
Right, this is a more perhaps local interest from Phil Yates, called Weak Memories. Sir, Councillor Eileen Berry's letter, Chronicle, July 19th, congratulating the organisers of the three-day festival at Weak Community Centre, brought back memories for me of over 50 years ago. I believe the idea of a community centre came about when the newly built council estate at Wyke was being developed in the early 1950s. At the time of the coronation of our Queen in 1953, residents gathered together for a street party, and the idea was then born to build a centre. Originally a prefab building in Taplings Road, it served the purpose, and before long badminton and table tennis groups were formed, along with a drama group known as the Centre Players. Jack Hayton, the chemist in Stony Lane, wrote and directed the first pantomime, Babes in the Wood. He was short of a robber. Somehow I came to fill the role, and so began my involvement with the drama group, which lasted until a certain theatre in Jury Street was threatened with demolition in 1974. I am so pleased to hear that the community centre is still thriving, and long may it continue. And that's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester.
Thank you, Tony. Just on a personal note there for our listeners, my wife, Rosalie Liard, was one of the babes in the wood in the first pantomime.
Oh, how lovely. So, you weren't one of the robbers, obviously.
No, I wasn't. No, that's been a subsequent career for me. Margaret, please.
Oh, and this is a letter from James Turner. Be silent, sir. Google Kim Gottlieb's appearances in your pages, and one is struck by the almost total lack of positive contribution in recent years. Flushed with the success of his Silver Hill Judicial Review, Council Gottlieb appears to have appointed himself carper-in-chief when it comes to the City Council's plans to regenerate the city centre and build the sorely needed replacement for River Park. My way or no way is his watchword. His recent letter fits the mould and is larded to boot with the tiredest of football clichés. Its tone and content are beyond exasperating. We have elected a council. They have done the work of consultation and planning. No doubt having balanced cost, resource, need and ambition, they have developed a plan. Not everyone will be happy with every detail of it, but that is inevitable and inherent in the nature of the process. Councillor Gottlieb presents no evidence to support his insinuation that the council scheme is not a perfectly sensible and proper one that will meet the needs of the community. His rejoicing in the opportunity for yet more dithering and delay, on the other hand, is very good evidence that his real motivation lies not in the interests of the city and its residents, but in feeding his obviously hostile animus towards his former colleagues. Let Councillor Gottlieb be silent if he cannot be positive, and let the council get on with putting spades in the ground. It is past time that they were allowed to do so. James Turner, Edward Road, St Cross.
Thank you, Margaret. John, please.
George Tippett says, keep Andover Road open. Sir, it's nice to see our MP, Steve Brine, talking sense over the ridiculous plan to close Andover Road and reroute all the traffic through the new King's Barton housing development, Chronicle July the 19th. This idea is frankly mad and will add quite some time to commuters' journeys day in, day out, meaning they will be sitting in their cars or lorries for longer, polluting a housing estate that's full of children going to the new primary school there. Brilliant. Please, powers that be, just keep open the perfectly good straight road into the city we already know and love. Save money and motorists' time and not clog up the lungs of the young, all in pursuit of some trendy plan to have so-called shared space in a housing estate with diesel belching articulated lorries. I see that Conservative city councillors now want to keep the Andover Road open too, along with Mr. Brine, but the Liberal Democrats don't. I know who has my vote. That's from George Tippett, South Drive, Littleton.
Thank you.
Well,
Tony?
This is a letter from signed by six people. Jenny Watson, Geraldine Buchanan, Joe Coleman, Cheryl Davis, Steve Jarvis and Derek Whitfield. And it's titled, Lest We Forget. Sir, the Full Flood and Weak Great War Project has received an enormous boost as they've been awarded a cultural grant from Winchester City Council to help disseminate the soldiers' stories that the group have been researching for the past 3 years. The names of the soldiers who died in the Great War have been taken from the memorial boards in St Paul's Church, Full Flood, and the memorial book in St Matthew's in Week. There are 91 names in total. The group are also seeking for further information on any of the men listed on these memorials. If anyone thinks they have relatives who had Winchester connections and who died in the Great War, or know someone who has any stories or knowledge, then we would love to hear from you. The group's email address is at the bottom of this letter. To view the list, click on the Remember the Great War Dead, Full Flood and Week website link below. As we approach Sunday, November the 11th, 2018, the time has now come to make these men's stories accessible to all interested people, especially local residents and schools, but also those interested in local and family history. Aspects of this will take money, especially the publishing of the book by Sarsen Press, which is not covered by our City Council grant. If anyone would like to contribute to making this happen, then we've set up a fundraising site. If you would like to read the list of names or get more information about the project or would like to support us, then please check the following website: www.leet.com/c/remember-the-great-war-dead-full-flood-week-winchester. Email fullfloodandweekgreatwar@yahoo.com. And that, as I said before, was for the six people I mentioned.
Thank you, Tony. I have, of course, memorised that website.
Yes, of course.
As have all of our listeners, I'm quite sure. So you don't need to repeat
very
it for
good,
anybody.
Very good.
Margaret, please.
Right, this is a letter from Simon Lever. Excellent service. Sir, we are fortunate in Winchester that our much-loved city is well managed through the City Council's strong financial stewardship. This is positive news, allowing investment in key projects for the benefit of the community. I am therefore surprised that the article on page 12 of last week's Chronicle was afforded so little space. Winchester is a city that projects an incredibly positive outlook, and I am proud of the city's accomplishments. I enthusiastically support the Council in its positive endeavours to regenerate Winchester. We may take for granted the excellent level of services we all enjoy from a Council that genuinely cares for its residents. I am happy to say I enjoy living in Badger Farm and regard Winchester as a beacon of positivity. Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
John? This letter is from Andrew Rutter, who is a retired Winchester City Council Conservation Officer, and it's headed Great Opportunity. Sir, how is archaeology paid for? The present legislation assumes that the developer pays for any excavation and assessment requested by the local authority. This works well for smaller sites, as seen in Southgate, Jury and Hyde Streets. However, for larger sites, it's a different story. Professor Martin Biddle's explorations in the Cathedral Close, Wolvesey Palace and the Great Hall Courtyard were exploring the medieval sites of known significance. I suggest they wouldn't have been so successful without his brilliance in raising funds in America and attracting volunteers in the process. The original planning application for the redevelopment of Peninsula Barracks included extensive underground parking off Southgate Street. This would have produced considerable information about Saxon Winchester, but founded on sheer cost of archaeology. When the Brooks development was given planning permission, including an underground car park, one might have expected that since Winchester has been designated one of the 40 most important archaeological towns in the country, that national funds would be forthcoming. At the Brooks in the 1980s, a comprehensive excavation was organised that attracted enthusiastic public interest. As we now know, English heritage funds were withdrawn at a late stage. The city's archaeologists did their best and made significant finds, but inevitably there was a time cut off with such a costly development. Now the Silver Hill regeneration has created another opportunity that could contribute to a new visitor attraction in relation to the Saxons and the development of the English language. However, the archaeological report headed by Professor Biddle recommends that it's left as undisturbed as possible based on the academically correct observation that in 50 years' time, archaeological methods would have advanced so much that greater knowledge would be obtained. This appears to me too academic, not recognising the unique needs of this town. What better opportunity could occur when the city council owns 80% of the site? Who would think of demolishing the new quality buildings that will be constructed here in 50 years? That letter is from Andrew Rutter, a retired Winchester City Council Conservation Officer, St John's Road, Winchester.
Thank you, John. Tony, what's the next?
The next one is from Dermot Hill, entitled Road Danger. Sir, re the 32,000 hen egg production facility, chronicled July 12 and 19, in addition to the serious ecological, environmental and visual impact, problems associated with the application there are also serious transport and road safety issues. These are particularly relevant to residents in Enmill Lane, Pitt and Sarum Road. I used to hold an HGV licence and have a good understanding of the challenges faced by HGV drivers. The proposal is to use 16.5 millimetres articulated lorries for many of the movements, the longest articulated lorries allowed on UK roads. The surveys submitted to planning for the applicant did not include the A3090 junction, the most dangerous junction on the proposed route with the fastest traffic. When attempting to join the A3090 from Enmill Lane, it is difficult to adequately visualise traffic on the major carriageway approaching from the right. Turning into Enmill Lane from the A3090 is also problematic due to the speed of oncoming traffic and having to turn quickly into Enmill Lane when the road is clear. For a slow-moving 16.5-metre articulated lorry, this is a hazardous manoeuvre. Significantly, it is not possible for these lorries to approach Enmill Lane from the Romsey direction, forcing them to travel to the roundabout, causing further congestion on a main arterial Winchester roundabout. The entrance exit on and off the Sarum Road are staggered, making a chicane-style junction. Drivers of these 16.5-metre HGVs will have to look both ways while at the same time watching their curbside wheels to ensure there is sufficient hard standing without them coming off the road, a difficult manoeuvre. As a result of this chicane-style junction, friction will be severe due to the scrubbing of the wheels. In hot or on damaged surfaces, the scorching will cause rapid road service deterioration, making it increasingly dangerous to through traffic and escalating maintenance requirements. I hope that Highway will conduct a full survey of the proposed access route to determine whether the development creates inappropriate traffic and to ensure the safety of residents and road users is not compromised. And this is from Dermot Hill on behalf of the Crabwood Action Group, Sarum Road, Winchester.
Thank you, Tony. Margaret?
And this is a letter from Chris J. Perry. Restore cuts. Sir, Home Office statistics released last week show that half police investigations are closed without a suspect being identified, which is hardly surprising given that whilst the population has grown by 5% and the police have had to cope with the added threat of terrorism, the number of police officers has been reduced by 14%. The public has responded to rising crime with a demand for more police and tougher sentencing. However, with detection rates at an all-time low of just 9%, the prison population grew by 90% between 1990 and 2016, a clear indication that it is detection or the fear of being caught which is the deterrent and not the severity of the punishment. Therefore, tougher sentencing is not the answer, although police numbers pro rata to population growth should be restored. There needs to be a whole systems approach with agencies working together. The first 5 years are the formative ones, where children learn right from wrong, and there needs to be greater investment in work with children under five in the context of their families by health, education, leisure and children's social work services. The majority of crime is committed by children and young people, and research has shown that all forms of residential containment reinforce offending and establish a pattern of crime for life. It is therefore alarming that the number of children and young people held in secure accommodation has been increasing. During the 1970s, 80s and 90s, social services departments were very successful in working with the police to reduce delay and develop policies of diversion and alternatives to custody, with programs which interested in fully occupied young people throughout their waking hours, which saw huge reductions in reported crime and offences associated with adolescence. Although considerably cheaper and more effective than custodial care, these programs were very labour-intensive, and these are the budgets which have been cut. Chris J. Perry, a former director of Social Services South Glamorgan County Council and a former director of Age Concern, Hampshire, Southampton Road, Cadnam.
Thank you, Margaret. And John, please.
I think this is the last letter, isn't it?
It is indeed.
It's entitled Home Delivery, and it's from Valerie Etteridge. Sir, the NISA local in Otterbourne give a friendly and cooperative service to local people and a wider set of customers. Nearby, there is a care home, and a few elderly and frail people live independently in the grounds and have used a home delivery service from the above-mentioned shop for a long while. Last week, the shop announced that they were stopping home deliveries, and at this news, much concern was caused to the small number of residents. This move by NISA to cease delivering to these few people seems far from the ethos of NISA, which is making a difference locally and also supporting the community. It has been suggested the few involved go online to larger stores for home delivering, but these people don't own a computer or are not computer literate. In the shop there is a notice: home deliveries can be arranged for bags of garden compost. Why, if this is available, could the home delivery service not continue for the few that have used it in the past and depend and rely on this service? On behalf of the few frail and elderly, Valerie Etteridge, Main Road, Otterbourne.
Thank you, John. That concludes our letters for this week. An entertaining variety, I thought, there. If you have an opinion or a subject you'd like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860836. That's 01962 860836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or you could also write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. Now we go on to Hampshire Chronicle comment, which has been read by John, please.
Yes, and it's entitled Proposed Leisure Centre, Laugh or Cry? It is difficult to know whether to laugh or cry over the latest issue concerning the proposed sports and leisure centre at Bar End. Proposals for the £38 million centre on playing fields at Bar End has been proceeding relatively smoothly before Winchester Action on Climate Change voiced objections, provoking a strong response from Lisa Griffiths, portfolio holder for health and well-being. We report the story on page 2. I don't know if we've got it elsewhere. When we're, have we?
Page 2 was, I think, sort of earlier on. Did you not read page 2?
No. anyway, I continue. The Liberal Democrats have joined in the criticism of aspects of the project. Schemes such as the Sport and Leisure Centre, Station Approach and the Central Winchester Regeneration, also known as Silver Hill 2, have had far more public consultation than projects 20 years ago. There are grounds for criticising the Sports Centre plans. It does appear a missed opportunity to only have an 8-court sports hall instead of one with 12, which would cater for the growth of the local population. But we appear to be getting to a stage where there is a danger that nothing will ever get done. People who are consulted are being consulted, asked their views to inform the decision-making process, not given the right to try to put the kibosh on proposals because they don't match exactly what they want. The saying, the best is the enemy of the good, is apt. No one will ever get exactly what they wish for.
Thank you, John. Next item is Khalid Aziz's. I think it probably is. Tony, please.
And his article is headed, Where Should Priorities Lie? The lowest number of police officers since 1996. Increasing levels of recorded crime. Children being used as criminal spies. Police failing to prioritise hate crime. These are just four of the many headlines which have assailed our law enforcement agencies in the last week. Those whom the gods wish to destroy, they first make mad. Fast forward 2,500 years, and the words of playwright Euripides might well read, those who wish to destroy the morale of public servants, they first regulate. So it was that we had to endure Wendy Williams, lead inspector of Her Majesty's Inspectorate, opine that Nanny Knows Best voice, beloved of the regulators, that hate crime is heinous because strikes at the heart of who you are. Well, of course, but is it a priority? Don't get me wrong, people who abuse others because of who they are, usually but not exclusively based on race or sexual orientation, are bad and often mad. I know what it's like, having been on the end of it myself. When I first appeared on TV screens in the South, irate viewers inquired in none-too-gentle terms as to why Television South couldn't find a homegrown presenter for their 6 o'clock news programme. That was 30 years ago. I didn't feel threatened, just mildly amused, particularly when I was allowed to suggest on air that if they didn't pipe down, I'd come and live next door to them. Today, of course, everyone is looking for someone else to deal with, even the slightest of slights. Everyone wants to be a victim. Ah, but what about when hate turns to violence? Well, we already have laws for that, and yes, if hate is an aggravating factor, the courts can and do add that to the mix when meting out punishment. However, crimes have to be detected first, and with so few prosecutions and even fewer convictions, is it any wonder that crime is surging? Criminals know that they're very unlikely to get caught, let alone prosecuted. The politician's answer is often to turn to regulation. That sounds like a good idea. After all, you cannot trust public servants to do the right thing, can you? You have to appoint people to tell them what is the right thing. So, to be seen to be fair, regulation needs to be evidence-based. So let's use up even more precious police time recording crimes, ensuring they are properly pigeonholed so that ultimately they can be used as a stick with which to beat the regulated. This all goes on in a vacuum. Regulators follow their carefully drawn up codes and make their pronouncements irrespective of the environment in which those regulated are operating. In Hampshire, our police force has already taken tens of millions of cuts in funding, and there are more to come. They countered well with technology. Hampshire was the first force to use electronic fingerprint recognition. But we still need crimes to be prevented, detected, and prosecuted by real police officers. What to prioritise? When we are burgled, we feel outraged, but we appreciate the violation is nothing compared to that of rape or of being stabbed. We abhor drugs and the evil done to our children, but where does that fit into our priorities? Ahead of burglary, but behind rape and stabbing? Calling for prioritisation grabs a headline for a day, leaving the poor police to sort out what to do next. Shrill voices suggest all must be prioritised, including hate crime. But if everything is a priority, then nothing is. Beleaguered and undermanned law enforcement agencies have apparently sent children caught in county lines drug raids back into drug dens to spy on their puppet masters. This is just plain wrong. Children are vulnerable and should have been protected. Putting them at risk as spies is certainly hateful and, I suspect, a crime. What a world.
Now we go on to a letter from Westminster. Margaret, please.
Right, letter from Westminster. And this week it's by the MP George Hollingberry. It was a real privilege to be given the role as Minister for Trade Policy at the Department for International Trade last month, and it's fair to say my feet haven't touched the ground since. Getting up to speed is a big task, and I have very much enjoyed doing so while starting to make a contribution to UK trade policy as we move towards leaving the EU. It's vital that the government is committed to free trade, because that is the best way for us to prosper post-Brexit. Free trade is a fantastic and progressive means of stimulating economic growth, creating jobs, and providing greater consumer choice. Protectionism does quite the opposite. Of course, we will soon have the means to enter into our own trade agreements, and many countries want to reach a deal with us as soon as possible, and this is a very positive news. My job, in a nutshell, is to develop, coordinate, and deliver a new trade policy so that countries can know what we want and that the UK is open for business. Part of my role is also to meet UK businesses, to talk to them about the policy. And I have been to quite a few parts of the country to do so. I will also be travelling to other countries to meet trade bodies, officials and government ministers to discuss the UK's position. It's certainly very important we make sure everyone knows that Britain wishes to be a global trading country. And obviously this work will become even more significant when we leave the EU. The role has also led me back into speaking in the House of Commons for the first time in a number of years. My roles as a whip and a parliamentary private secretary excluded me from speaking, so I cleared my throat when I led on the trade bill earlier this month. It's fair to say I have never been a great fan of speaking in the chamber, so my knees were knocking a little. Thankfully, my colleagues were very kind. Although I voted to remain in the referendum, I am firmly of the view that the UK will prosper outside the EU. And since I became a minister, this has become even clearer to me. The UK has areas of global excellence in services and goods that other countries want to buy. There are many countries like the USA, Canada and Japan that have enormous markets and they want to trade with us as easily as possible. Both the UK and Japan, for example, want a bilateral trade deal quickly post-Brexit that will be worth billions for UK exports going forward in areas like chemicals, cars and even food and drink. A year ago, the PM and the Japanese PM, Shinzo Abe, agreed to work quickly to establish a new economic partnership between Japan and the UK. The UK-Japan Trade and Investment Working Group, established last year, is tasked to deliver on this commitment and met for the second time in May. So much work is being done with Japan and many other countries to ensure the UK can prosper in trade post-Brexit. It is exciting and an honour to be part of that work. George Hollingbury, Minister of State for Trade Policy, MP for the Mian Valley.
Thank you, Margaret. Now we have a look at Belgarum's alternative view of the news. There are three items, starting with John, please.
This one is entitled, Ruth finishes second in Mrs. Galaxy contest. Here goes. A Hampshire beauty queen represented the UK at an international competition held in the USA. Ruth Wade, aged 29, from Winchester, was placed runner-up at the international Mrs. Galaxy pageant in Orlando, Florida. Ruth was crowned Mrs. Galaxy UK at the UK Galaxy pageant's 10th anniversary finals back in March, which landed her a place at the prestigious Mrs. Galaxy pageant in the USA to compete against women from across the globe. Ruth has just spent a week in Orlando for the international final of the Galaxy pageants, where she finished second in the Mrs. Galaxy division. The winner of Mrs. Galaxy was Stephanie Hopkins from North America. At the Galaxy pageants, Ruth took part in activities including photo shoots, interviews and attended several parties before stepping onto the stage to represent the UK. Ruth said, I have had such an incredible week in Orlando and was honoured to represent the UK on the international stage.
This summer, not as dry as you may think. We've been sweltering almost daily in temperatures nudging 30 degrees or 86 degrees Fahrenheit. Belgarum has not personally seen any rain for at least 6 weeks, having dodged all the occasional showers. But the Environmental Agency statistics from its station in Otterbourne, published weekly on the Country Matters page, show that so far this year, it has overall been wetter than last year. The most recent figures for rainfall is 390.28 millimetres, compared to a thirst-inducing 353.4 millimetres by the same time in 2017. In 2016, we had been lashed with 547 millimetres of rainfall.
Thank you. Right, we now go on to historical items, starting with Margaret, please.
25 years ago, Friday, July the 23rd, 1993. A new initiative to fight the growing social problem of itinerants and beggars in Winchester has been proposed by the City Council. It is behind a move to get all interested organisations together to hammer out a fresh and coordinated approach to the problem. Assistant Chief Executive Tony Merriman said the City Council wanted to move itinerants away from Winchester's busy shopping areas and tourist attractions, but he ruled out a strategy based simply on a tougher public order approach. We are certainly not embarking on a bid to chase them out of town. That would neither be possible nor moral. We will be looking at the reallocation of existing resources or possibly even finding newer resources to help those people.
50 years ago, Saturday, July the 27th, 1968. Commenting on the recent student troubles, Miss P.M.C. Evans, headmistress of St. Swithin's School, Winchester, told parents and pupils at the annual speech day on Friday week that the important thing was the quality of stability, a right judgment in all things which a girl should have before she left school. I believe, she said, that those who leave sixth form have largely achieved this, and those who leave at 16 have not. I have gathered from talking to one or two parents that the recent student troubles have made some people worried about the thought of sending their daughters to university. Is something wrong with the schools that the people we send on can behave so strangely, with no apparent regard for authority, law or property? I would only say that when you think of your daughter's future, you cannot keep her isolated from the general current of opinion around her. Surely what we have to do is to try to produce people who will think for themselves and think clearly enough to see through propaganda from any quarter, and who will be stable enough to take their own decisions, not swayed by mass emotion.
Excellent. Totally. And this is from 100 years ago, Saturday, July the 27th, 1918. Sunday next, August the 4th, being the fourth anniversary of the outbreak of war, a special service will be held in the nave of the cathedral at 3 o'clock. The mayor and corporation will attend, and address will be given by the Lord Bishop of the diocese. Immediately after the service, the mayor will propose a resolution from the balcony over the west door of the cathedral.
And 200 years ago was Monday, July the 27th, 1818. On Monday, an inquest was taken by Mr. Sherbian of Sidmonton House on view of the body of George Halloran, house steward to the Earl of Roden, who drowned himself on the Saturday morning preceding in a pond near the house. It appeared in evidence that he had of late years been subject to violent bilious attacks, particularly about this month, which constantly affected his head for some time afterwards and rendered those about him apprehensive of his doing some mischief to himself. It was immediately after an attack of this sort that he committed this act. Verdict: lunacy.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Right, we now took a quick look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. If you want to pop into the Gurkham Museum in the Peninsula Barracks, not only will you see some wonderful exhibits, but if you go on the Friday the 3rd or Saturday the 4th of August, you can have a free curry. Yeah. There's an exhibition in the Discovery Centre, Winchester, of works by Agnes Martin, who is one of America's foremost abstract painters. This runs until October. There's the internationally recognised exhibition of the Fields of Battle, Lands of Peace, 1914-18 photography. It is already erected in the outer close of Winchester Cathedral, and it will run until the end of July. And a lunchtime recital in the cathedral, Nadine Benjamin, soprano, accompanied by pianist Nigel Foster. That is on the 31st of July at 1 p.m. Now, those were all of our regular features. Thank you all. Now, before we move on to the general news, I know that many of you are eagerly awaiting for the lighting up times for this week. The sun will rise at about 5:30 a.m. and it'll set at about 9 p.m. So on with the general items of news, starting with Margaret, please.
Council gift for the residents moving into Chesil Flats. Residents moving into Winchester's new retirement complex have been given a welcome pack by Winchester City Council. The council has given residents in each apartment at Chesil Lodge, a hamper full of local produce to thank them for their patience after the completion of the complex was delayed for 6 months. One of the first residents to receive a hamper was Mrs. Terry, who was presented her hamper by Winchester City Council leader and portfolio for housing, Councillor Caroline Horrell, and new Tory Councillor Jamie Scott. Moving to a new home can present a lot of challenges for residents and their families. We want to be there and help them to get to grips with their new surroundings and start to enjoy the many benefits that Chesil Lodge provides. Housing and care services at Cheswell Lodge have also begun, and the council has invested in a moving in and settling in provision to ensure the upheaval for new residents is minimal. The scheme at Cheswell Street is funded jointly by Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, Homes England, and a gift from the late Winchester-born resident Harold Harris. Hampshire County Council invested £3 million for the commissioning of care for people living in the development, which is part of the authority's programme to fund more than £40 million over a decade on extra care schemes.
Food Bank is boosted by donation. Winchester Basics Bank, which donates food to those in need, has itself been boosted by a donation. Dr. Ruth Coggan, daughter of the former Archbishop, raised over £2,240 on a sponsored walk on Saturday, June the 23rd, along the beautiful Clarendon Way walk. Some walked the full Salisbury to Winchester distance, whilst others walked the shorter distances of 5 or 11 miles along the way. Dr. Coggan handed over the money to Mike Slynn, Chairman of Trustees at the Winchester Basic Bank's office in Penton Place, Highcliffe. In the last 12 months, the Food Bank has provided food for over 2,000 local residents who were in emergency need for whatever reason. The Basics Bank is adding an extra service during the long summer school holidays by providing packed lunches for some children. The Basics Bank is well supported by many of the local supermarkets. They are planning to raise £26,000 this year. Anyone who would like to become a volunteer or would like to find out more about the work that they do or to make a donation is asked to ring 01962 855 774. That's 01962 855 774. 774, and that number is answered on Tuesdays or Fridays.
Bid to prevent water garden development. Councillors will today decide on whether to implement measures to stop development on a Winchester beauty spot. As previously reported, the water garden, which backs onto Winchester Cathedral, was sold for more than £100,000 earlier this year, amid fears that it may be redeveloped. Concerns were first raised about the site, which has been labelled as an informal tourist attraction and features a picturesque garden with a stream running through it, when Coldbrook Street site was put up for sale in December. The listing by Winchester estate agents Belgarum said, "There may be future development potential," sparking anger among some residents. Now, according to a report due to go before the Winchester City Council's Planning Committee today, those concerns have resurfaced after a proposal to build a single-storey dwelling on the site were discussed at a meeting in April. As a result, Winchester City Council is seeking to put a tree protection order on the site, as the trees are of sufficient public benefit and public visual amenity value to be protected, which would, in effect, stop any development. The proposal will be heard by the Planning Committee after an objection was lodged on behalf of the water garden's owner, understood to be a consortium, including Hampshire UKIP leader Alan Stone. According to the council report, the objector states that in his opinion there is nothing about either of the trees to suggest the removal of the trees would have a negative effect on the local environment. He considers that it is not expedient to serve the TPO as the trees are not under immediate threat. The objector states that pruning work is now needed to address the abrasion of the adjacent building by branches from the trees, and the implementation of this work structurally compromises the trees, and therefore the trees would not meet the criteria for protection by a TPO. Speaking to the Chronicle, Mr. Stone said that the garden could not be built on anyway, as it is protected, and wants to carry out work on the trees so the venue could be used to hold functions. He said, "What's the point of having something that beautiful and building on it. We have a nice block of land and we want to do something with it. Asked about calls for it to be kept a tourist site, Mr. Stone added, if the council wanted to buy it, they had the opportunity. The claim that the site would not be built on was welcomed by the owner of the Wolvesey View B&B in nearby Colebrook Place, John Holder. He said, if the owner is not planning to build in the garden, that is good news. I would welcome the possibility of some functions taking place there. It could be magical to see the water garden come to light, lit up for a small summer party.
Hanging Braskets give support to campaign. Students have supported a breast cancer charity for the second year running with some hanging baskets with a difference. Led by psychology teacher Chrissy Rycroft, a team of staff and students have adorned the Peter Simmons campus with hanging baskets made using bras. The bras have been filled with flowers and foliages in shades of pink, white and purple, breast cancer awareness colours. Staff members contributed flowers for the braskets and money from donations will go to breast cancer care. Alongside the braskets are tennis balls in the Wimbledon colours to promote Wim Ball Done, to raise awareness of testicular cancer, which mainly affects young and middle-aged men, but about 6% of cases occur in children. Incident rates are projected to rise by 12% between 2014 and 2035. Ms. Rycroft said, after the success of last year's Hanging Braskets campaign, we wanted to continue our efforts to promote breast cancer care. This was also a great opportunity to expand the campaign by using the tennis balls as a way to discuss issues around testicular cancer.
Duke of Edinburgh Gold Awards are celebrated. A group of 37 Hampshire adventurers have shown they have what it takes to achieve the Duke of Edinburgh's Gold Award. At a celebratory event organised by the Duke of Edinburgh's Hampshire Forum and supported by Hampshire County Council, the Gold Award recipients were honoured with certificates of appreciation from the Lord Lieutenant and President of the Forum, Nigel Atkinson. Nigel Atkinson said, "These young people have demonstrated a huge amount of commitment and determination to gain this very prestigious award, and they can be very proud of their achievement. I know they will all have thoroughly enjoyed the challenge too. As there is a real need for leaders to train the next generation of young participants, I would urge them to continue their good work and enjoyment by offering their time and skills as volunteers for the Duke of Edinburgh scheme." Also present at the celebration was Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council and a vice president of the Forum. He said, "I commend all of those who undertake to achieve a Duke of Edinburgh award. To take that achievement to gold level is to be congratulated especially. These award holders should be very proud of their achievement, which is tremendous. The Duke of Edinburgh's award is a nationwide scheme requiring participants to spend time volunteering, learning or improving a skill, taking part in a physical activity and undertaking an expedition with friends. In the case of the Gold Award, a young person will typically give over 50 hours of volunteering, spend a total of 18 months on the skill and physical activities, and undertake a four-day expedition in terrain classified as wild country, from Snowdonia and the Yorkshire Dales to Scotland, Dartmoor and the Brecon Beacons, camping overnight, carrying all their kit and being fully self-sufficient."
Right, college celebrates the class of 2018. Sparshot graduates, lecturers, family, friends and supporters finished off the academic year in style with its graduation ceremony in Winchester Cathedral. Students were presented with their degrees and prizes for individual endeavour and academic success as the class of 2018 embarked on the next stage of their lives. In a packed cathedral, Principal Tim Jackson reviewed Sparsholt's achievements through the year. He said, "I'm delighted to see 1,400 qualifications presented at today's ceremonies. Many of our students are already in employment, often hundreds of miles from Winchester and overseas. Sparsholt graduates are recognised as a valuable asset to any businesses or organisations wanting the combination of expert knowledge, skilled professional standards and relevant industry experience that Sparsholt graduates bring. Sparsholt undergraduates and postgraduates follow many decades of their predecessors into professions involving animals, zoo, veterinary nursing, equestrian science and performance, aquaculture, marine, wildlife, ecology, conservation and horticulture. Guest of honour was broadcaster Alastair Stewart, who saluted those receiving their degrees. I was born in Hampshire, I live with my family in Hampshire, and Sparsholt is one of its most precious assets for what it does, what it stands for, who it produces, the superstars of today. I have a passion about education, about the grit and determination of our young people to graft and succeed, about the dedication, flexibility and loyalty of a brilliant staff, and about the love and sacrifice of your parents in supporting their sons and daughters through this vital part of their lives. At its heart, it is all about relationships between people and that precious relationship between people and the country in which we live. BSc Honours Equine Studies 2018 graduate Victoria Sly gave the vote of thanks on behalf of students. We can all be grateful for everything we gained from Sparsholt, the opportunity to persist and strive and to achieve our dreams. The day also included presentations to Level 3 diploma students who concluded their studies at Sparsholt this year.
Thumbs up for voter ID scheme tested in county. A controversial scheme piloted in Hampshire, which required voters to show ID before casting their ballot, worked well, the elections watchdog has found. Trials of a voter ID scheme were carried out at May's local elections in Gosport as part of a government effort to reduce voter fraud. The government-led trial will be extended at next year's local elections. That's despite the scheme being described as shambolic by Labour and criticised by campaigners for electoral reform. But in its assessment of the pilots, the Electoral Commission said, overall, the voter identification requirements trialled in May 2018 worked well. Nearly everyone in the five pilot scheme areas who went to vote in their polling station was able to show identification without difficulty. The number of people who did not vote because they couldn't show identification was very small. But the watchdog called for a wider range of councils to be included in future pilots and acknowledged concerns from organisations including MenCap and the RNIB that some groups of people may find it harder than others to show a passport, driving licence or travel card as part of a photo ID scheme. The Commission also said there was some limited evidence from the pilots that younger people and those who don't always vote were less likely to say that they would find it easy to show identification. The report found 0.6% of people tried to vote at their polling station but did not have the right identification, and while many of them came back, 0.2% did not. 80% of voters said they were aware beforehand that they had to show identification to vote. 79% of people said the requirement made no difference to whether or not they voted. Craig Westwood, the Electoral Commission's Director of Communications Research, said, from the experience of voters to the staff delivering the pilots, the overall picture from these pilots is a positive one. The next step should be to test the requirement for voter identification in areas with different demographics. Constitution Minister Chloe Smith said, "We plan to continue to pilot ID at next year's local elections so we can explore further what works best." But Shadow Minister for Voter Engagement Kat Smith said, "The government cannot justify their dangerous voter ID plans after what we can only be described as a shambolic set of pilots."
FATE raises vital funds for church. It was a quintessential English event, complete with pims on the green, hot dogs and cream teas, as hundreds flocked to Micheldever on Saturday for its annual village fete. Around 800 people enjoyed the sun, games, races and activities to raise more than £4,000 for the village church. The annual event at Lord Rank Playing Field saw dozens of volunteers pitch in, arriving at 8 a.m. to set hay bales and put up stalls to provide activities including archery, sack races, numerous stalls and the annual dog show. FATE Chairman Louise Keyes said, "All of my neighbours volunteered in a variety of ways, from organising the dog show, running the bookstall, opening the FATE, to managing the signage on the days preceding the event. The FATE couldn't have taken place without them. It was a real community event which will be talked about for a long time to come and has raised vital money for the upkeep of our local church."
High summer, the best time to go butterfly hunting. The winged, fairy-like form of the butterfly has long been used to symbolise ethereal concepts. The ancient Greek word for butterfly is psyche, which means soul, and the Aztecs believed deceased loved ones would visit as beautiful butterflies to assure them that all was well in the afterlife. To this day, butterflies bring us joy and inspiration, and seeing them bobbing gracefully through the air is something we look forward to year on year. There are 46 different species in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, and July is the perfect time to discover them. Here are some you may find locally. Red Admiral. The velvety black wings, intense orange stripes and white spots that define this characterful butterfly make it impossible to miss. Red Admiral butterflies migrate to the UK all the way from North Africa and Europe to breed. And from July onwards, there is a wonderful emergence of fresh butterflies. You can tempt them into your garden with buddleias, flowering ivy and rotting fruit. Common Blue. Common Blue is a variable in appearance, ranging in colour from striking powder blue to almost fully brown. However, they all have a string of orange spots round the top edge of their underwings, making them easy to identify. Common Blues are the most widely spread butterfly in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. There are typically two generations of Common Blue in a year, but if the weather is warm, there can be up to three broods over the spring and summer. Marbled White. The marbled white is a striking black and white butterfly with distinctive checkered markings. Marble whites are on the wing from June to August and show a marked preference for purple flowers. Wild marjoram, field scabious, thistles and knapweed are particular favourites. St Catherine's Hill in Winchester is a great place to see marbled whites, and a host of other varieties. Over 25 different species breed there. Meadow Brown. Just as the name suggests, meadow brown butterflies are mostly brown in colour and are often found in meadows. They have two small dark rings, one on each upper wing, with an attractive smattering of orange around each. The meadow brown is abundant in many habitats, and these sociable butterflies can be seen flying together in their hundreds. And the last one listed, the comma. This orange and brown butterfly gets its name from the comma-shaped white spots on the underside of its wings. It has distinctive ragged wing edges which help camouflage it at rest. It looks just like a dead leaf. But this butterfly prefers woodland edges, but can be spotted feeding on fallen fruit in gardens. To spot a comma, try Blashford Lakes near Ringwood.
Party in the Park is back. Winchester's Party in the Park returns tomorrow, Saturday, July the 28th, at Summer's Closed Recreation Ground in Stanmore. There will be a children's fun fair, go-karting, petting farm and an educational reptile experience. The day will also feature trial sessions of the new Children's Cube soft play facility and refreshments from the new community cafe in the Coral Centre. Councillor Caroline Horrell, council leader, said the district has a variety of exciting events and festivals going on throughout the year, and events like this provide a sense of cultural vibrancy and help bring the community together. This day from 12 noon to 5 p.m. is run by a committee alongside the City Council, A2 Dominion and the Carroll Centre. Steve Ruggles, chairman of the group Winchester Party in the Park, said members of the committee would like to thank the local community, our partners and sponsors for their support. We look forward to seeing residents from across Winchester at the event. The free event also includes performances from magicians Steve O and Kai, the Rompsey Old Cadets, Otterbourne Brass Band and local musicians.
Littleton Village Show returns. Littleton and Harestock Village Show returns on Saturday, September the 1st from 12 noon to 5 p.m. at the Recreation Ground in Littleton. Organisers are promising a fine show with the Spitfire Sisters and their 1940s style close harmony singing as the headline act. Keel's traditional fair organ will provide a contrast in style, and the Barton Stacey Trad Jazz Band will keep the afternoon swinging along. There will be new attractions and old favourites, including a fun fair, ferret racing, a flight simulator and traditional stalls and games, so you can be sure of an entertaining afternoon. It's time to start thinking about your entries for the flower show. Start feeding your flowers and vegetables the finest compost. Look out for photo opportunities. Start that piece of craft work you've been meaning to do. The show will be open for lunch again, as an earlier start went down well last year, and there will be vegetarian and West African food, a barbecue and a bar.
Wow. Hurrah.
Dozens of jobs will be created as two major retailers open new branches in Eastleigh. Both German supermarket Aldi and discount chain Pound Stretcher will open their new stores at Chestnut Avenue Retail Park today, Thursday, July the 26th. As previously reported, the opening of Pound Stretcher will create 25 jobs. But Aldi has now confirmed that its new 1,280 square metre store will also create 37 jobs for the local community. Chandler's Ford resident Mark Hawes will work as store manager at Aldi and said, "We've put together a brilliant team to help run the Eastleigh store, and I'm confident that together we can provide an excellent shopping experience. The team and I look forward to welcoming everyone through the doors." Olympic gold medal winning cyclist Danielle Rowe from Hamble will officially open the store on Thursday at 8 a.m, and the first 30 shoppers will receive a complimentary bag full of fruit and vegetables. Meanwhile, Pound Stretcher will open its doors to the public at 10 a.m, with Councillor Bruce Tennant, the Mayor of Eastleigh, cutting the ribbon. Residents will be given the chance to win more than £3,000 worth of giveaways on the opening day, and there will be games and balloons. Eastleigh Borough Council leader Keith Howe said, "Both Aldi and Pound Stretcher will be popular new stores and provide competition for Asda nearby." Discount rival Lidl has had a store on Twyford Road, Eastleigh, for around 10 years.
Warning over MMR festival risk. Festival goers are being urged to get vaccinated against a potentially deadly disease following an outbreak in the UK. More than 750 confirmed cases of measles have been recorded so far this year, 161 of which have been in the southeast. The warning comes just weeks before 60,000 revellers head to Hampshire's Boomtown Fair at the Matterley Estate near Winchester. Running between Wednesday, August the 8th and Sunday the 12th, the annual festival is now in its 10th year and will feature a 2018 UK festival exclusive with the Brit Award winners Gorillaz headlining. Experts at Public Health England say anyone who has not received two doses of MMR vaccine is at risk, but young people in environments with close mixing such as festivals are more at risk. There are also particular risks to unvaccinated people travelling to Romania and Italy, where there are currently large outbreaks of measles, a highly infectious virus that can sometimes lead to serious complications and can be very fatal. Dr. Mary Ramsey, head of immunisation, said the measles outbreaks we are currently seeing in England are linked to ongoing large outbreaks in Europe. The majority of cases we are seeing in teachers and young adults who missed out on the MMR vaccine when they were children.
Celebrating 40 years in charge. Community leaders are celebrating 40 years in charge of one of the gems of the Hampshire countryside. Hampshire County Council has marked four decades since Sir Harold Hillier Gardens near Ampfield was placed in its sole care. Last week, the leader of the County Council and Hillier Gardens trustee, Councillor Roy Perry, was joined by Council Chairman Elaine Still, Gardens Director Wolfgang Bopp, with 10 couples celebrating a special anniversary of their own. The couples were invited to celebrate their own 40th wedding anniversaries at the occasion for a commemorative tree planting. Councillor Perry said, "Since Sir Harold Hillier left the legacy of the gardens to the County Council, our staff and volunteers have continued to develop and care for the remarkable collection of trees, shrubs and hardy plants, all with a focus on horticulture, conservation, education and recreation."
Right, more rail misery as strikes set to begin.
How exciting.
It is. Passengers across the south are facing 8 days of summer rail misery, starting today, in a long-running row over driver-only trains. South Western Railway is facing a series of walkouts by members of the Rail, Maritime and Transport, RMT, Union, over the role of guards on trains. It follows the recent deal between the union and another rail operator, Greater Anglia, which, according to the RMT, guarantees a guard on services. In a separate development, South Western Railway's franchise is set to be renegotiated after less than a year following its decision to scrap proposed improvements to the timetable. Today's 24-hour strike will be followed by another one on Saturday. More industrial action is due to take place on July 31st, August 4th, August the 11th and August the 18th, and a 48-hour walkout is planned for August the 31st and September the 1st. Passengers are facing a reduced service on lines across the south, including the Weymouth to London Waterloo route. A South Western Railway spokesman said, "We've been engaged on ongoing talks with the RMT and are surprised and disappointed that it has decided to call further strikes." However, Mike Cash, the union's general secretary, said, "The RMT is making a very simple request of South Western Railway, that they take note of what's going on elsewhere in the railway industry and come forward with serious proposals."
Thank you very much. Well, with that uplifting note to the end of our news, we conclude the extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for this week. Just another reminder that Irene Dowding is the person to call if you have any problems with your recording. Her number again, 01962 870370. And thanks to our copying and dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our editors, Anne Frew, Angela Ling, Carol Fraser and Jane Thomas. And, of course, many thanks to our readers today. Margaret Bowden.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
And from me, Peter Lydiard, goodbye. Please put your memory stick and the address label in your wallet when you finish with it and return it to us as soon as possible. Goodbye.